Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome, welcome. This is Fountain of Life Healing School. My name is Donna Crowe. I'm the director of Fountain of Life Healing School, and we do classes that help our listeners to improve their health. And today I'm really excited because we have an awesome guest. Her name is Caroline Berenger, and if you're not familiar with Caroline, you're in for a treat. Caroline is the co-CEO director of Immunutrition. That's the name of her website, Immunutrition. And she's vice president of the Nutritional Therapy Association. She's a board-certified nutritional therapy practitioner, which I think is just a really neat concept that of nutritional therapy. And that's really what we're going to be talking about here today. She is the East Coast lead instructor for the Nutritional Therapy Association. She's a master certified healing food specialist, published health author, and international health lecturer. And she also currently serves as board of directors, an active member on the board of directors for the Nutritional Therapy Association. And that's just a little bit of who she is. She's extremely knowledgeable about the topic today, which is cultured foods. Some of you I know are not familiar with cultured foods at all. It's a whole new deal to you. It's not even a term you've heard. And that's why we're doing this show. A lot of people don't know that cultured foods around the world and in American history were and are a normal part of the diet for some people. But in America, they sort of have fallen out of favor, and that really was due to the fact that about 100 years ago, when we started to have grocery stores and have food shipped here and there, fermented foods were a real nuisance because as they were traveling, they would continue to ferment and explode, you know, in the truck and on shelves. And so shelf life was a challenge and a challenge to the bottom line of the profits of the manufacturers. And so essentially what they did was they made imitation cultured foods, and so that's what we have in the grocery store now. Sauerkraut would be an imitation cultured food. Initially, sauerkraut was a cultured food, and we're going to find out the benefits for those things. But because of the inconvenience of shipping cultured foods and them falling out of favor, that we've got several generations of people who don't even know what they are, don't know what the benefit is, don't know how to make them. Have no idea what they taste like, you know, and I personally think that this is a huge gap in people's health. I know a number of people. I'm just going to tell a Mercola story really quickly here. For those of you who did not hear her interview with Dr. Mercola, he talked about himself having a problem with his mouth, that he would develop plaque in 1 month's time that would be equal to, like, normally a year's worth of time. So he literally got his teeth cleaned once a month. But he said when he went on fermented foods, cultured vegetables, these kind of things, he went in and got another, you know, going in to get his teeth cleaned again, and his dentist was extremely surprised and pleased that there was very little plaque. And so he knew that that was an intestinal issue, was a dietary issue, and Dr. Mercola is not naive as far as health goes. He's a very knowledgeable person, and yet he still had this stubborn problem that he had not figured out how to resolve. And I think it's a major missing piece for a lot of people. I think it's an extremely important topic, and that's why we're going to talk about it today. I just want to say a few things before I let Caroline cut loose here. You know, we have pretty much every city in the nation has a wellness center, and a place where you can go and various people can help you try and get your body back on track. And the concept that I want you to kind of get here today and begin to think about is that your kitchen should be the first wellness center that you have in your life. People have a tendency to think pharmaceuticals are potent and strong and powerful. You know, they're like rockets and bombs, you know. And food is just wimpy. It's like a weak handshake, you know. Or herbs, they're just weak and wimpy. But really what science is finding is that food is the most powerful medicine, and they're finding that herbs and natural things actually in the laboratory are being shown to be more powerful than pharmaceuticals without the side effects. And what we're going to learn about here today in cultured foods is something that's powerful. It is a powerful, powerful healer. I don't want you to think, oh, food, you know, food's not going to fix it, because it can and it will. It is fixing many people in serious issues. So I'm going to say welcome, Caroline.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here, Donna.
And we're going to just ask you right away, can you tell people exactly what cultured foods are? And we'll just start with that.
Sure. I'd be delighted to do that. Well, first of all, the terms cultured and the term fermented, they're really interchangeable. So some people may go, what are cultured foods? But if you mention fermented foods, they'll say, oh, I know what those are. So just think of fermented and cultured as one and the same. I think that's important to mention. Now, I could tell you a lot about cultured foods up front, and cultured foods such as sauerkraut, but living sauerkraut, kefir, milk kefir or water kefirs like coconut kefir, yogurt, sour cream, all of these foods, like you said, I loved how you put this in the beginning in your introduction, how you said that all of these foods are some things that we've eaten, but we don't even know they belong to the cultured category. And, of course,
right,
because of the lack of shelf life, the alive foods don't, they can overculture or, like you said, explode on the shelf. We have imitations, and that would be the sauerkraut that's in that little squishy bag near the hot dogs in the supermarket, and that's been pasteurized. So people or companies, I should say, are still culturing and fermenting foods like yogurt and sour cream and things like that, but they're pasteurizing them. So they're really not alive anymore. The probiotics that are in them, they say there are living cultures, but they were at one time, but they're really not at that point. So, you know, you'll get a little bit of activity in your body from the good gut bugs or the probiotics that are in cultured foods that you buy in the supermarket, but they're not going to be robust as they should be if you either make them at home or buy them from a trusted source. So I just wanted to start out with that aspect first, is cultured and fermented are the same thing. And yes, you're probably consuming more fermented or cultured foods than you even realize. They're just not prepared in the traditional way. And that's our goal, is to eat them in the way that nature intended them to be consumed, because they were prepared properly.
And why do we even care about having cultured foods?
Well, I mean, that's a huge question. There's so many aspects that I could go off in 10 different directions. But I think the first thing to do is, what makes cultured foods cultured or fermented foods fermented? I think that's the question that a lot of people have. So I'd like to go back a little bit, digress to a very beginning place, you know, and it's a very good place to start kind of thing. So I just want to do a little sort of like a microbiology 101 about what are cultured foods, but yes, how do they become cultured?
Excellent.
And the first thing to mention is that bacteria and yeast are responsible for the culturing process. Now, you'll have some cultured or fermented foods that require just a bacterial culturing process, or you'll have yeasts and bacteria, or you'll have a spore or some kind of inoculation. So a food has to be in its raw state. It has to be whole and natural. Say, let's, for example, we're going to make yogurt. We need good, healthy, real milk, organic, hopefully, and raw, if possible. Some states it's legal, some states it's not. So do the best that you can. Now, how does that milk become yogurt? Or how does the cream that separates out of that aqueous part of that milk become sour cream? It all is due to the microbe. And you have to know what microbes, for example, let's say Lactobacillus bulgaricus. The Bulgarians were noted for their longevity because they ate a lot of yogurt. And that's a bacterial culture. It's milk that has bacteria added to it, a certain specific strains that make it into yogurt. That's the culturing process. The bacteria divide and multiply, and they also manufacture lactic acid which is a natural antibiotic substance, but it's what makes sour foods, cultured foods, sour. We had an email the other day. It was so cute, and I chuckled when I read this. It said, "Hi, I purchased your culture starter from your online store at Immunutrition, and I tried my first batch of vegetables, and I cultured them. It's been about 5 days, and I opened them up, and I tasted them, and they're sour. What did I do wrong?" And just as you chuckled out loud, I did too, and here I am sitting here reading this in the office. And I said, oh, my goodness, people don't even know what they're trying.
Exactly.
So let's just go back and understand how this whole process works, the culturing process, and who's responsible for it. That's something we teach in our Certified Healing Food Specialist Training, or CHEFS training, CHFS for short. Well, right now, science knows that there are about 500 to 1,000 known species of beneficial, neutral, and pathogenic organisms, microorganisms. Now, these organisms live within us. They live on our skin, within our mucous membranes, within our digestive tracts, the urethra, in your ears, on your eyelashes. They're everywhere. They are the microbiota. We are the macrobiota. And sometimes I wonder, you know, as a human species here on Earth in this vast universe, I wonder what microcosm we are in another macrocosm. So, you just kind of start thinking, what bowel do I live in, you know, kind of thing.
That's not a pretty picture.
I know, right?
Well, but, I know Dr. Mercola mentioned the fact that we have 10 times the amount of bacteria in our gut as we have cells in our body, right? Is that correct?
Absolutely, and you just took the words right out of my mouth. We have trillions of human cells, but we have even more trillions and billions, billions and trillions and zillions of microbial cells that live within us. It's a 10-to-1 ratio. For every human cell you have, you've got 10 microbial cells that are living within you that are supposed to be doing things like helping with your metabolism, communicating with the gut wall, working with your immune system, and so on and so forth. So here's just a little bit more of science behind that. Each of us has about 2.5 to 4, even maybe up to 5 pounds of beneficial, neutral, and pathogenic bacteria living within us. Now, we want to make sure that at all times, 80% of that composition are the good guys. And then the other 20% could be a bit of yeast or fungus, maybe even a parasite or an amoeba or something like that. We all have microbes within us that are not so beneficial. The thing is, it's okay if you're good bacteria, your probiotics, or your microorganisms, those are all interchangeable terms, are most abundant. They should be at the 80 percentile mark. So 2.5 to 4 to 5 pounds, depending on little people or we have big people. So it depends on who you are. But we each possess a unique composition. It's kind of like your fingerprint. We all have a fingerprint that is very much our own and no one else's. So that's called your microbiota, by the way, the whole composition, good and bad and neutral. Now, they are there because we would not be human without them, and we would not be able to survive without them. They are part of our immune system. They are part of our digestive processes, our metabolic processes in the body.
What do you mean by that when you say metabolic processes? For someone who doesn't have a clue what that word means, what does that mean?
Okay. It's the basic metabolism, the functioning of your daily body to keep you alive and to keep you healthy.
Okay.
So that would be, let's say, for example, you are having manufacturing hormones. That's part of a metabolic process. You are converting fats into fatty acids. That is a metabolic process. You are converting oxygen in your body, and you are breathing out CO2, carbon dioxide. That is a metabolic process. So it just is all the general workings of your body to keep it alive and going every day.
And, so you're and saying it's all, that the probiotics, these beneficial bacteria in your gut, have an effect on your hormone levels?
Everything.
Okay.
Because, you know, if everybody right now just take your hands and place them right on your abdomen, like maybe right on your belly button, you know, right around there. Life begins and ends right there. It doesn't begin in your brain. It doesn't begin with your heart. It begins and ends in your digestive tract. That is your 80 to 90% of your immune system is right there with your hands on your belly and your intestinal tract. So what lives in there are that 2.5 to 4 pounds of bacteria, and they go in and they manufacture B vitamins and vitamin K that nourish the colon. They make end-stage digestive enzymes that aid us in absorbing a multitude of nutrients. They help balance our intestinal pH because we want our small intestine to be more of a pH of maybe neutral, 7.0, because there's a pH scale that runs from acid to alkaline. And somewhere right in the middle is where our small intestine is. But our colon, and think about the word colon, colonies of bacteria. Colon, C-O-L-O-N, is the part, the first part of the word colonies. And that is where most of your good organisms in your gut are going to live. And they help to balance intestinal pH. They crowd out pathogens that come into the digestive tract or through the body. They attack them. They quarantine them. They can even neutralize toxins. They boost your immune system. They will increase the efficiency of your bowel transit time in your body, so you actually have a bowel movement more often, which is a good thing, a couple of times a day. And they protect the intestinal mucous membranes and the walls of your intestines. Microbes are truly essential to our well-being. So how do we get those microbes, though? See, that's the thing people don't really understand. Well, where did that 2.5 to 4 pounds, how did that get inside me? Well, the thing is, you're born into it. You're inoculated at birth. And the only way to be inoculated with, they call it a vaginal gulp, where you actually take in microorganisms from the birth canal of your mother. They move down your digestive tract and wait for colostrum to create that from breast milk, and colostrum from breastfeeding come down into the digestive tract of the baby and create a mucosal bedding. And those little microorganisms that are passed on from the mother, which, by the way, in the Gut and Psychology Syndrome and Gut and Physiology Syndrome by Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, short is GAPS, G-A-P-S. She also states that because our parents have intercourse and they are exchanging organisms that live in the groin area, so your parents are swapping those organisms. So if there is an infection in one, another one might acquire that infection, and that's called, or if there is a dysbiosis, meaning a disproportionate ratio of bad organisms to good, instead of the good to bad, in the favor of the good organisms in the gut, the probiotics, then that can be passed between partners. So when you're born, whatever composition is in the vaginal tract, the birth canal of your mom, then you will receive that. Now, of course, we have a lot of cesarean births today, that where children do not receive that initial inoculation. And there have been so many rounds of antibiotics that have been given to the last, 30, 40, 50 years, that the unique composition of microbes isn't always so good. So even if children are born vaginally through a natural birthing process, it doesn't mean that they always are inoculated with the best microbes. But let's talk about a healthy individual, an individual that does have a good microbial balance in the bowel and in the vaginal tract. Well, then if that baby moves through that birth canal and is able to obtain the good balance of microbes, those wait for the colostrum and the mucosal bedding, and then there's breast milk that has essential nutrients in it that feed the microbes that are waiting to be fed. Prebiotics are called, are food for probiotics, prebiotics, P-R-E, for pro, P-R-O. And by the way, probiotic means for life, and antibiotic means against life. So we'll get into that in a minute. But, and of course, many women have during labor antibiotics, so sometimes the baby isn't even inoculated, even if the mother is healthy at birth, because they're wiped clean at birth. So we get this inoculation right away, and the food from our mothers, the breast milk, the nutrients in the breast milk feed those microbes down in our gut, and that is the beginning of our immune system. Now, it's our job to nourish and maintain that delicate balance in the gut. And that's where I was saying before, where we have all the pharma drugs and the antibiotics and refined foods. Too much sugar in the diet can be very upsetting to your inner microbial world. So we have all these insults that that end up occurring to your microbiota. And that's how we get them. And hopefully in European countries, they eat a lot of probiotic-rich food, like raw milk and raw cheeses and living foods like krauts and kimchi and cultured dairy products. But as you said at the beginning of this call, we've lost that practice here in our American way of life, in our SAD diet, standard American diet. So why do we want to bring bacteria into our body? People think, oh, bacteria, hand sanitizer, go grab it. Oh, my gosh. Everybody's
right.
Germ-phobic, right?
Yes.
Well, there are good germs and there are bad germs. You know, there are, I shouldn't even call them germs, because there are viruses that are helpful in the body, and then there are viruses that are detrimental to our health. And there are helpful bacteria and there are helpful yeasts, as well as pathogenic. And the good thing is that, I don't want to get off track here. Why would we want to bring bacteria into the body? I'll get into that other subject later.
Let me ask your question just briefly. Can you give us a couple testimonies of experiences that people have had who had health challenges and added cultured foods to their diet?
Oh, absolutely. One testimonial, this may not have, quote, a health benefit, but yet it does. I just want to speak about this first.
Mm-hmm.
Because cultured foods are sour, in their nature, they are naturally sour due to the lactic acid that the bacteria produce that makes the food sour. So cabbage becomes kraut, sauerkraut. Cream becomes sour, sour cream, and so on and so forth. The reason why they're sour is because of that lactic acid. And lactic acid, or because the sour flavor is present, many people find that when they consume cultured or fermented foods, they lose their cravings for sugar.
Well, that's fascinating.
Yes, and I can't
that's
tell you,
a big
I have...
deal.
Oh, I have tons of people who say, you know, if I go into the refrigerator, if I'm craving something sweet. Now, the reason why you're craving sweets is a couple of reasons. Your blood sugar is imbalanced and you're looking for quick energy. Maybe you've dropped too low. You're hypoglycemic. Or because you have opportunistic organisms growing inside you and they love sugar. So they're going to kind of guide you to the kitchen to get a Twinkie, you know. And believe it or not, they have a very powerful way of making you do things you might not normally do. So if you have a dysbiosis, which would be having the bad guys outnumber, eating cultured foods will help to not only bring in microorganisms that crowd out those pathogens in you so you don't have those cravings anymore, but they'll also help balance your blood sugar and get you to start reaching for the sour flavor rather than the sweet flavor. And the sour flavor is very astringent, and it is balancing, where sweet is more expansive and salty is more contractive. So if you ever think about going to the movie theater and eating popcorn and Coke, popcorn and Coke, popcorn and Coke, you're going yin-yang, yin-yang, expansive, contractive. And then Sour Patch Kids ground you, and you don't want any more Coke and popcorn. That sour flavor... It's true. And that, why do you think so many candies now out on the market are sour? Because innately the human species is craving sour foods. They're just not looking in the right place. So many people report back that their sugar cravings have reduced significantly. They also, a personal testimonial about a woman who had chronic constipation, was able to relieve, she didn't have to take any kind of stool softeners or laxatives or magnesium. She was even trying a natural approach with reaching bowel tolerance with magnesium. And, she started eating cultured foods and everything worked more efficiently, and she was able to have better transit time to have a bowel movement. What else? Just makes my food taste taste better and digest it better. A lot of people report back that even if they have 2 tablespoons of cultured vegetables or a half a glass, 4 ounces of kombucha, which is a cultured or fermented tea, delicious. Check it out in your health food store. If you've never heard of kombucha, it's wonderful. It's a digestive aid, well, full of probiotics, the good gut bugs.
Yes, so, on that subject, I can give a testimony real quick on a woman that I know who was having serious hormonal imbalances and causing panic and stress and poor sleep and just struggled. And she had a good diet. She exercised. She tried to take care of herself and was doing a number of supplements that were helping, but it was just, couldn't quite get that homeostasis. And she started drinking kombucha, not really with any kind of thought of it improving her health. She was just going for the fun of it, you know. She enjoyed it. And so she was drinking it almost daily. And in about 2 months, everything changed. Her body finally got into balance, and it was like the scales tipped and things started working right again. And she's persuaded that was the thing that put her back into balance.
Oh, definitely. There's, like we said, cessation of sugar cravings, better transit time, more effective digestion. What else? I mean, I could go on and on as far as even to say that alkalinity improves. And people say to me, well, how would we become more alkaline if we're eating a more acid food with lactic acid? Because lactic acid, malic acid in apple cider vinegar, lemon juice, citric acid, they all are acid outside of the body. But when they're metabolized, they're very mineral rich, so they have the ability to mobilize alkaline ash minerals within the system. And these are minerals that alkalinize us. So our blood stays nice at that 7.35, 7.45 ratio or range of, on the pH scale, which is optimal for good blood pH and good health. So don't be worried about the acid nature of cultured foods. They metabolize alkaline, and they're very, very helpful. So it can help with alkalinity. It can help people who don't have a very good good ability to taste. Like some, for example, people who are taking chemotherapy. I have my mother is actually on chemotherapy right now, and she's fighting stage 4 lymphatic cancer. And cultured foods, kombuchas, vegetables, yogurt are all she wants and can taste properly because chemo can very much alter your taste buds. She can only eat the sour flavor. It's the only thing that grounds her. And I've heard this many, many times from other nutritional therapists who work specifically with cancer patients. So another aspect of why we want to bring this bacteria into our body, these good non-pathogenic organisms, is because they detoxify us. You know, if we eat that piece of fish with some mercury in it, guess what? If we have a good composition of microbes living in our digestive tract, that mercury will not harm us one bit because microbes are the cleansers. Just to give you an idea of, I always think of these deep thoughts early in the morning when I'm meditating, and it really hit me when I was thinking about, gosh, you know, we need to have good organisms in our body, and we can't wipe them out indiscriminately with antibiotics and try to recover our microbiota. We need to nourish it and stay away from those things as much as we can, because when we die, the very microbes that work with us to keep us alive while we are alive, they also, when we die, take us back to the earth.
Absolutely.
You know, so they cleanse us. They cleanse our bodies, bring them back to the earth. They cleanse the water, like, for example, the spills, the oil spills on the ocean and toxic dump sites. What do you think they do? They dump millions and millions of pounds of bacteria all over these environmental insults. And guess who cleans them up? The microbes.
So people who are concerned about the mercury that's in their mouth or, like you say, in fish, heavy metals that are in the environment, their goal should be to get the bacteria, the good bacteria in their gut up and flourishing so that it never leaves their gut. It never can get into the bloodstream or into the tissues because it's eliminated right there in the gut.
Well, usually the reason why they're having the problem in the first place is because something happened early on in their life to their microbiota, and it was not able to chelate, and they ended up having saturation of heavy toxic metals in their tissues. So something happened early on, most maybe an ear infection or two as a child. It can happen as early as that, that your gut composition is changed and not able to recover because of several rounds.
I know that a lot of people are thinking, well, I can just go to the health food store and get a bottle of acidophilus or something and be done with it. Why do I have to be messing with cultured foods?
Well, that's a really good question, Donna, because recently, as you mentioned, we've been working with Dr. Mercola on doing some extensive lab studies on our cultured vegetables using his complete probiotics, which we've changed the recipe of that culture starter, if you will. We were able to report, and we were very excited about this. He was able to report back to us that he had sent the vegetables off to a lab, and that lab showed that in 1 gram of vegetables, of our culture vegetables, which is, I think, I can't remember how many grams is a tablespoon right now off the top of my head, but it's not very much.
It's
1 gram
much.
Of vegetables was equal, had 54 billion organisms in 1 gram. So Dr.
I remember seeing that statistic. He said that one serving of those was equal to an entire bottle of high-potency probiotics.
Well, yet one serving, 6 ounces, was equal to 100 and almost 140 capsules a day of his probiotics.
Right.
So that's why on the GAPS diet, the Gut and Psychology Syndrome diet, and also nourishing traditions, that's why cultured foods are such an integral part, a central theme of a traditional diet. Our ancestors cultured foods all the time. They cultured soy in the East. They cultured tea in the East. They cultured sauerkraut in Germany. I mean, we were making cheeses in Europe, so, and wine in Italy. These are all things that they were doing on a consistent basis. So they were getting trillions and trillions of organisms every day just by eating their natural diet. So that's what we want to do in our modern diet, and it's the one key thing that is missing. And it, you know, we've got everything else pretty much in place as far as getting back to a traditional, properly prepared, nutrient-dense diet as close to the farm as you can get it or as local as you can get it. We've got that idea and that philosophy. That's getting saturated around our country. But still, we're missing the probiotic-rich foods. And so, you know, it's important that we not only buy these foods and eat them, but we understand why they are good for us. And that's why I started out with a little bit of education about how we get it, how we're to maintain it. And cultured foods are really the way that we maintain it. We maintain microbial world.
I know that a lot of people, you know, our concept, especially as Americans, has been that the brain runs everything.
Nope.
But what a lot of people don't know is there are more, there are more information pathways from the gut to the brain than there are from the brain to the gut. The gut has way more of an influence on the brain than the brain does on the gut. And that's why people with schizophrenia and bipolar, these kind of things that we consider brain injury, brain illness, they're being resolved by getting the gut terrain back in shape, back in balance. They're finding that people's brains are working better. So, you know, instead of throwing pharmaceuticals at the brain, you can throw cultured foods at the gut. And not only do you not end up with the side effects that you do from pharmaceuticals, but, you know, the people find their symptoms resolving and they can feel normal and not feel like they're in an altered state from the pharmaceuticals that they're on. Is this correct?
Absolutely. Right on the money, because, you know, your gut can either be a source of nourishment to you or it could be a source of toxicity. If you have an imbalanced bacterial microbial world, a dysbiosis in your gut, because you've abused through diet or antibiotics or however it happened, whatever the insults were or insult was, it's changed. And it's not, now it's not a place where life, it's not life-giving, it is life-altering at that point. Because when you've got pathogenic microbes growing in your gut, they give off nasty toxins. And those toxins go through the gut wall, the small intestinal, the permeable membrane. It should be selectively permeable, but it gets injured when it gets into a dysbiosis. So things get in there to the bloodstream that shouldn't in the small intestine, from the small intestine membrane into the bloodstream. And then that can cross over into your blood-brain barrier and your brain, and you've got all these toxins in your body. And your liver can't deal with it, and you end up very chaotic inside and not able to focus and possibly having odd behavior, tics and such. And those things, mental illness really does come from the gut. And you can't find a child with ADD or ADHD or even Asperger's syndrome or any autism that doesn't have a digestive issue. They always have a digestive issue. And Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride talks about this extensively in her GAPS book. But even beyond having some being on the autism spectrum, just the everyday person is suffering now from dysbiosis, and that's gut and physiology syndrome. So that's why we want to bring these cultured foods in. And it amazes me how doctors don't know any of this. I mean, there are a handful that do, but most don't. So this is relatively new news in our modern world, but really it's ancient information.
Yes, and that's what I was talking about earlier, that because we haven't had, you know, we've got several generations of people who don't even have a clue that people have eaten cultured foods for all of world history.
They have no clue, you're right.
Before there was refrigeration, you had to culture foods or you would go without, you know, because you grow crops and at the end of the summer, say you've got a cabbage, you know, they're only going to stay fresh for so long, but if you culture them, they can remain through the entire winter and into the summer until you have more food being produced and without a refrigerator. And so they're, you know, a practical issue, you know, for all of world history. Along comes refrigeration, and it's not so much of a need. And again, you know, with our history, as far as manufacturing goes. So, again, we have people who don't even have a clue. This is the way people have always eaten. And you know, you talked about the Bulgarians. You know, I just think about my grandparents. I'm 61, and my grandparents, they were extremely healthy. And they did not eat, I mean, they ate white bread, and they ate stuff that most health people would be appalled. But they also had this kind of stuff in their diet, these traditional foods. And it made them healthy. They didn't take vitamins. They didn't take supplements of any kind. And they were strong and sturdy and active and energetic. And we're missing it. We're trying to stuff supplements down our throat constantly, and we're malnourished. You know, this is something we should talk about. I know that it, for vitamin C, for instance, that the vitamin C in fermented cabbage is, isn't it like 20 times what it is in just raw cabbage?
Yes, and it's much more bioavailable, meaning you can use it better and assimilate it better. So, you know, raw cabbage is wonderful, and you'll get some benefit out of it. But, again, it requires that a cofactor or a helper to really make it bioavailable. And that helper are the helpers are the bacteria that go in and pre-digest that cabbage and start making a lot of their own enzymes and their lactic acid, and that just frees up that vitamin C in cabbage to where it's 10 times more potent. It doesn't, quote, make any more. It makes it available to you.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it helps with your nutrition. Yeah, you're getting more nutrition out of the food that you do eat. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to talk about briefly about cultured foods versus a pill. You know, a lot of the probiotics are grown on funguses. And for me, I actually had scary brain symptoms trying to take some probiotics that were grown on fungus, and I felt like I was going to have seizures, and it took me a while to figure out what it was. But, you know, the probiotics that you get from cultured foods, they will never cause harm to your brain, you know. They're going to relieve things like epilepsy in some people, depending on what the cause is. But for some people, the healing powers of the probiotics in cultured food will actually give relief in a situation like epilepsy. It's never going to promote it. So that's another reason to get it from the food rather than from a capsule.
And it is important to note, and if you don't mind, I'm going to jump off what you just said. It's important to note that when you start to introduce living foods, meaning foods that are alive with probiotic organisms, if you are not used to consuming them, you may want to start out quite small and infrequent. So, for example, let's say you wanted to make your own sauerkraut and you made a nice 32-ounce jar of it, and it was hearty and rich in microbes. Well, you don't want to sit and eat half the jar. You may be tempted to because your taste buds actually talk to your brain. And by the way, your gut brain is called your enteric nervous system. So you have more than one brain, like you said, in the body. And they're all going to talk together, you know, via your hypothalamus, which is your master endocrine, sort of down in the center of your brain. It's your most ancient part of your brain. But it senses everything that's around you, on you, in you, on your tongue, all those kinds of things. So when you bring cultured foods into the body for the first time, some people love them and crave them, and they want to eat the whole jar or the whole thing of sour cream, and then they end up having some, quote, die-off symptoms. Because they have some pathogenic overgrowth inside them, the good organisms and the foods that they're consuming go in and start to crowd out and push out those pathogenic organisms. So you may have a rash come through the skin, or you may have a really bad headache, or you may have some diarrhea, or go to the bathroom a lot in one day. You may have a funny taste in your mouth. You may have a funny smell under your arms because you're pushing toxins out through the lymph glands under your arms, in your armpits. You never know, but the best, as a rule of thumb, is to start out slow. One tablespoon of cultured foods wait for 3 days. Have one serving and wait for 3 days. Why 3 days? Because the digestive tract renews itself, the small and large intestinal cells, just about every 3 days. So what your body may be reacting to could be something from 2 days ago or 3 days ago. So you just want to make sure that you don't do anything different except bring in one serving of cultured foods. Monitor yourself. Keep a little food journal or a mood journal. And that way you can see, I didn't have any reaction, although I had a natural, nice bowel movement. I'm going to add in another serving next week, and I'm going to increase it over time and allow my body to crowd out the bad guys, but not do it too fast, and allow my body to slowly adjust and renew itself and reestablish good gut organisms.
That's excellent information. Along the same line, kind of similar thought here, some people love the flavor of cultured foods and some people really hate it. And I was talking to someone this week, telling him about the broadcast coming up, and he's going, I hate those things. They're so sour. So I want to explain to you that being a mom and having, fed children, babies really don't like food initially. They make the most horrible faces when you start putting food in their mouth. They just don't like the flavor. But food is an acquired taste, and you can start small in that way also and acquire a taste for it. If you're a guy and you like salsa, for instance, you like spicy food, you can take like a teaspoon of cultured foods, chop it up really, really fine, mix it in with your salsa, and start to get accustomed to that flavor. You can also choose things like kombucha. Kombucha is it's sour, but it's a little more palatable for some people.
Nature's soda, right?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people don't know that root beer used to be a fermented drink. Coca-Cola was initially a fermented drink, and it's now an imitation of the real thing. Kombucha, it's got wonderful carbonation to it. If you like carbonation, it's a really fun drink, and you can flavor it with different flavors, and it's a really good way to start. You can do the kefir that she was talking about. Some people call it kefir, people that don't know how to say it right. She says it right. The rest of us say kefir.
Well, I had a Turkish lady tell me, you are not pronouncing that right. She said,
I know.
Gefir. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
But yogurt is another option. And I can just tell you also, raw dairy is just a profound, wonderful, nutritionally satisfying, nourishing food. Please don't let people make you fearful of raw milk. Again, this is something people have drunk their entire lives, and people who are fearful about any kind of bacteria that they might get, I would say eat a bunch of cultured food, get your gut up, and you can eat all kinds of nasty things, and it won't be a problem. And not that raw milk is nasty. It's not. It's wonderful, but on the off chance that it had some E. coli or something, you know, we all have E. coli in our gut, and if you've got healthy bacteria in there, it's just not going to be a problem for you. You're going to be fine.
Well, if I may interject, right on that subject that you're talking about, did you know that every pathogenic bacteria has a cousin that is a beneficial, cousin of that same species? So, for example, Pseudomonas is a nasty flesh-eating disease, right? But the beneficial Pseudomonas make the metabolite or byproduct, which is a natural antibiotic substance that crowds out the bad guy in its own species, the pathogenic Pseudomonas. So let's take E. coli. We always see that being measured in a stool analysis, right? Because microbes do a lot of their job and then move out in the stool. That's why we need to replenish them and eat cultured foods every day, just rotate them. But in a stool analysis, you'll see E. coli. That's a beneficial E. coli that makes the byproduct antibiotic, or it's called a bacteriocin, all right, that crowds out the pathogenic E. coli. So the more you have good organisms in you, E. coli is not just a bad strain. It's got neutral and pathogenic and beneficial strains within that E. coli species. Well, better to have the good guys in there, because if you happen to come across something that has some E. coli in it that's of a pathogenic nature, you've already got the natural antibiotic in your body from the good E. coli to crowd out and kill and not allow that to take over and get you sick.
Yes, and I don't think also people know that that 85% of your immune system is located in the gut wall, and the probiotics determine the status of your immune system, of what its what your protection is determined by the probiotics in your gut. You want healthy levels to make yourself immune to whatever kind of cooties there are that are floating around in that particular season, and it's just an enormous thing. I want people to understand that it can possibly be an acquired taste. You might want to introduce it little by little so that you start to enjoy it. I don't think anybody ever that drank vodka the first time thought, boy, that tastes good.
Or smoked a cigarette or did any of those nasty things. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you literally can get used to that and crave it. I remember the first time I ate cilantro, I thought, good Lord, this tastes like soap, Why do people like this? And for the life of me now, I can't taste that flavor. It doesn't taste like soap to me anymore. I find it really delicious. And I did that. I ate it. I continued to eat it because I knew it had beneficial chelating effects in the body, and I thought it was a good thing to do, and now I love it. And so you can acquire a taste for these foods if you're not one of those people who initially just goes, oh, this tastes so good to me, you can acquire a taste for it. So don't be discouraged by that. Find ways to put it in your food, Again, do the soft stuff first. Do the kombucha first. Do the kefir first. Do the yogurt. Another thing, Rejuvelac. We haven't talked about here, but Rejuvelac is like taking wheat grains and putting them in liquid and fermenting them, and then you just toss the wheat berries and you can just drink the juice. And that you can add a flavoring to. It can be a way to introduce these kind of probiotics into your system, just another strain. A lot of people don't know also that these are floating around in the atmosphere. You can just put cabbage in water and leave the top off, and it'll start to ferment just from what's in the atmosphere.
And on the cabbage itself, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I want to talk about
that's wild fermentation.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about your website. You've just got so much going on. If people don't want to, you know, try and, if they want to just try the product first without, like, trying to figure out how to make it themselves, you have fermented cultured vegetables available, right?
We do. They're out of stock right now at this very moment. They'll be back in probably in the next couple of days. Because of the Mercola interviews, we have been bombarded with orders.
Oh, and right, right. Yeah.
We're a small company, so, you know, we make these by hand. And we have to we rely on Mother Nature for 5 to 7 days to do the culturing process, and we can't rush that in any way, shape, or form. So
right.
we are at her mercy, Mother Nature's mercy. But yes, you can purchase them, and that way we encourage you to buy a jar, even if it's not ours. Find somebody go talk to your health food store owner and say, hey, do you have any cultured vegetables or fermented or sauerkraut? Well, yes, we have bubbies, or we have, I think there's another one called pickles, or fresh pickles or something. And you can try them there. And that way you can say, okay, now I'd like to try some others. And like you said, experiment and see what you like.
We have one in our area that's actually a fermented salsa. And so it's got peppers and those kind of fun things in it. And that's
right.
Probably a good place for some people to start with something like that. I just want to spell out clearly your website. You want to spell it for people?
Sure. It's half the word immunity and half the word nutrition, the end of the part of nutrition and the beginning of the word immunity. It's called Immunitrition, IMMUNITRI. TION, Immunitrition.
And so they can connect with you there to get cultured vegetables if they just want to give them a try. But
yes.
You also have recipes there, right?
Yes, we have our culturing instructions. You'll see where it says on the, let me just look, I designed the website and I have to go look at it. Cultured Nutrition, in the top bar, you'll see it'll say home products. You can look at products there. Newsletter, blog, cultured nutrition, and there'll be a little drop-down menu, and you'll be able to see next to the last in the menu is culturing instructions, and you'll be able to download a bunch of different things like kombucha and cultured vegetables and salsa. I think the salsa recipe, somebody just wrote in and said we need to upload it again. It didn't load, but that could have been on the other person's end. We'll see. But there's cultured butter, and milk kefir and coconut kefir. So there's lots of instructions. They are text instructions, not videos, but they're very, very detailed and will guide you step by step through the process.
And don't you also have classes that people can take?
Yes, we have the Certified Healing Foods Specialist Training. We call it CHEFS Training for short, CHFS. And the focus on this training is definitely properly prepared, nutrient-dense foods, whole foods, but the core of the program is around cultured foods because we feel that's what's most missing in education in food today. And then we also have, I'm also an instructor for the Nutritional Therapy Association, as you stated, and we have things called foundations in that program, and the first foundation, of course, is the proper diet. But the first physiological foundation is digestion. And digestion is fundamental to being healthy. You know, if your digestive tract is not balanced and it doesn't have the good gut organisms in there in the proper balance to help you digest your food, make extra vitamins, you know, control inflammation, trigger hormones, so on and so forth, you do not have a solid foundation of health.
So if you're seeing skin diseases, you know, just annoying stuff, eczema, psoriasis, you know, cancer, diabetes, does this have anything to do with those things?
Well, any autoimmune condition, which type 1 diabetes is, MS, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, all of these are autoimmune conditions. How does the autoimmune condition come about? Well, there's an insult to the immune system, and it's imbalanced. And there's the two branches of the immune system, and one kind of handles the everyday, and one is a deeper expression of your immune system, and it's too technical to go into now. We don't have a lot of time. But those, when those branches are imbalanced, that's when autoimmune conditions come in, and autoimmune conditions are born in the gut. So pretty much everything that we're seeing, these modern illnesses, even heart disease, starts in the gut. And the best way to keep your gut healthy is to consume all different kinds of cultured foods. Rotate them. You know, have yogurt, kombucha, and cultured vegetables one day. The next day, have a little sour cream and coconut kefir, and something else that you've fermented and experimented with. Maybe just some cultured beets or something like that, or kvass, beet kvass, which is the liquid that you drink that's good for your liver and gallbladder. So keep your gut guessing, inoculate it with all different kinds of cultured foods, and you will be healthy. And you're going to may have a die-off first, and you may have a little bit of a transition period, and your palate will take some time to get used to it. But once you start tasting these foods, you will miss them when you don't have them, and that's when you know you're ready to really have some fun.
Absolutely. Also, I'd like people to know that this is not a difficult process. It takes 5 or 6 days, but you're doing nothing.
Yeah, you're
it's
working.
Doing all the work.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're living your life. It's culturing, and when it's done, you eat it, you know. But preparing it, it's usually just chop it up. You know, just give a really basic explanation here.
Okay, let's just use sauerkraut. We'll just use basic cabbage. You take your cabbage, and you can either use a mandolin and slice it up or dice it really small. You could use a food processor, but when you use the S blade, you might have more of a crushed salsa-like cabbage consistency. If you like it a little chunkier, I would say sliver it with a knife, or just cut it and chunk it up. What you're going to do is take a clean, I would start with a quart-sized mason jar, wide mouth, so your hand can fit in. Just take some cabbage, chop it up, and then you're going to add a little salt or not. You can add celery juice if you wish to make it nice and juicy, or you can use salt to pull out the natural organic waters in the cabbage. But you want to make sure that when you pack your jar full of cabbage, that you either top it off with water or you can use celery juice, because you want the whole process to be anaerobic, no oxygen, under the water, under the brine, as they call it, a brine.
Right.
So pack your cabbage real tightly in and make sure you have some nice juiciness as you pack it in. You might notice the juice come up over your fist as you're packing it in. You can also use a kraut pounder and pound it into the jar, you know, kind of press it in that it looks like a mini baseball bat. And you make sure that you cover it with liquid and then leave headroom at the top of the jar, and you can maybe an inch or so cover it with a mason jar top and put it into maybe a casserole dish, because it may weep a little bit. It may have some water come out of it or some of the juice come out. That's okay. You may see the top of the jar bow up and get really hard and dome-like. That's fine. It's not botulism. Those are the organisms breathing and multiplying and creating pressure in the jar. In 5 to 7 days, open it up. Taste it and see if you like it. If it's sour and it's pleasant to you, that's good. That means you did it correctly. You can put it in the fridge, and it'll stay good for months in there. Just don't eat out of the jar.
It's very simple. It's not complex. It's very simple.
No.
It's a very simple thing, and that's what I want people to know.
Quickly, on our YouTube channel,
we have 1 minute left.
Okay.
So.
On our YouTube channel, we have all that on there, so you can see it's done.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We have 90 seconds. This just went by way too fast. But that was awesome, Caroline. Thank you so much. You're just a really good teacher. There's just so much to this. I know you could teach for many more hours on this. But I'm hoping our listeners are a little more awake to this, and that they'll go visit your site and begin an education on this. This should be a part of everyone's diet. This is real food. It's full of life and vitality. It can literally turn your health around, and it's a simple thing. It's a pleasant thing. It's not hard. It'll save you money. It's cheaper than supplements.
Cheaper than healthcare.
So, yeah, it's very much cheaper. You know, it's what your body was designed to do, and you're never going to function perfectly unless you're doing what the body was designed to do. So Thank you so much for being here. It's just been an absolute pleasure to have you. I know that the people listening are really enjoying this, and I know that I'm going to hear from a bunch of people and being thankful for it. And just to let you know, tell your friends about this. It'll be in the archives. People can come and listen to this after the fact. Within an hour, it'll be archived and available. Thank you, everybody. God bless you. Thank you, Caroline. We got to sign off now. Stay tuned and come back and hear more. God bless you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.